I have a little bit of information. I've got James has provided me, James Doherty has provided me that there is a new update, case law updates part one and part two. There is a set of slides that have been downloaded just now for your briefcase. And so if you want to go in there, he's worked mightily hard on getting that updated. So the last, but certainly not least, and we'll hold him to his 30 minutes, no letting you out early for anything, Brad Bullock is going to speak to us on legislative immunity.
Yeah, Barbara lied to you, as is her wont. It's 30 minutes and then 15 minutes of ethics, so.
Oh, there's the ethics part.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm a liar.
That's it. All right. As Barbara said, my name is Bradford Bullock. I'm a partner at Messer Fort. Been representing cities for a little while now. Represent them as city attorney and both and in litigation. So I'm here today to talk to you about legislative privilege, how you invoke it, what it is, what its contours are, and then there is an ethics component to it. And so I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about who's the client. I'm going to talk about this from the city attorney perspective. And the interplay between legislative privilege and some of the other privileges that might come into play when you're trying to invoke that and you're trying to protect your client. In this case, that would be the city, the entity. So let's talk about what is legislative privilege and from what does it spring. And it is a product of the separation of powers. And the Supreme Court has said that judicial inquiries into the mindset and the motives of legislators are to be avoided. And that is true. The idea that a court can look at the motives of a legislator and then determine whether or not the motives for the action that they took are good, bad, indifferent, that begins to intrude upon the legislative process. And so there's a whole body of case law that talks about how and when you can get them on the stand or get documents related to their decision-making process. But those are, or they are limited, as you'll see. So, I included this quote here. This is a Fifth Circuit case, en banc, the Shelton case, and I think it's a good case to kind of give you an idea of, again, the basis of this, which is separation of powers and. A court's assumption of the power to decide between competing legislative proposals or to require the state to prove the validity of its choice is quickly the right to change the legislative process itself. And that's about as succinct an articulation of the reason behind the separation of powers rationale for this as I think there is. So courts should be reluctant to engage in that. That is not their role. Doing what I do from the city attorney side, it's our job to vigorously protect that legislative privilege. Now, we'll get into kind of how it's invoked and what its contours are and who can invoke it and who can't. So, what you're going to see over the next few slides are big blocks of text that talk about how broad the scope of it is. And what they're going to tell you is that it's very broad. And to give you an idea,